Born on America's darkest day of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays the mortgage on the family home to lift the financial burden. For severely injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling severely injured heroes to move around their homes more independently. Through the Foundation's Homeless Veteran Program, Tunnel to Towers is providing housing and services to homeless veterans. More than 3,300 were helped last year alone. Because all veterans who honorably served, whether in peacetime or war, deserve our nation's gratitude. People who put their lives on the line for our country and our communities need your help now more than ever. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good and never forget 9/11 or the sacrifices of this country's heroes. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. You may be able to reduce your tax liability while investing in a sector that has historically delivered sound returns. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com today.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Buck Sexton Show. We have Yeonmi Park with us now. She is an author, a defector from the North Korean totalitarian state. She's got a book. We're going to talk a bit about it. While Time Remains, I'm holding it up here so everyone can see it. Yeonmi, honored to have you here on the podcast. Thanks for joining.
Oh, the honor is all mine. Thank you for having me on.
So let's start with this. I want to get to your book because you raise concerns about what's happening in this country based on your extraordinary personal life experience growing up in and escaping from North Korea. If you would just, for a lot of the people listening, they may not know your story. They maybe have seen you on Megyn Kelly's show or Sean Ryan. So I know you've been telling people about what happened to you. But for those who aren't familiar with your story, could you just give us a sense of where you, what it was like in North Korea, where you grew up, what you dealt with and what you had to overcome?
Yeah, so I was born in North Korea in 1993 when I was growing up there. It was the height of the greatest famine in the modern history. Therefore, millions of people died from this man-made famine by the regime. The Northern regime thought that if they starved people, then people would be so busy surviving, they would not challenge and thinking about political freedom. So that's why we were on purpose starved. And so my everyday struggle being in North Korea was really surviving and finding food. On top of that, I still remember the very first thing that my mom taught me as a young girl was that don't even whisper because the birds and mice could hear me. If I said the one thing that was wrong, they were not going to execute me. they were going to execute 3 to 8 generations of my family. After this kind of dark area, I decided to escape from my homeland when I was 13 years old.
You decided to escape from your home. I mean, that obviously entailed tremendous risk. North Korea, as I understand it, will they shoot people on sight for trying to get away? If they see you trying to escape the country, they'll execute people, right?
Of course, it's like a shoot to kill order from the border, and that's why we risk our life to escape. However, we were able to find a broker that bribed the guards, border guards, and they helped us to escape to China.
And why did you decide that it was finally time to escape?
It was really not a matter of deciding that was the time or not. We just could not simply find the next meal. It wasn't something that we had even option not to escape. Being in North Korea, it's like, you know, you are in the building that is caught on fire. And you see if you jump out from the window, if you survive, you survive. If you don't, you die. No matter what, if I stayed in, I was going to die from starvation anyway. So it was not even a decision. We were starving. We wanted to find food to survive. And that made us to escape that morning.
And what was the cause of the famine being so much worse? And you said it was the worst one in a very long time. Was there a specific decision made by the Kim family, or what happened?
So initially, the shortages began when the Soviet Union collapsed. You know, right. There's a saying, right? The socialism only works when you want to run out somebody else's money. Exactly until the 1989, Soviet Union was heavily subsidizing North Korean economy. And when they start helping North Korea, and then Kim Jong-il had a choice to make. Is he going to open up economy and free trading and feeding the people, or is he going to starve the people? What he came up with at the time is that it's easy to do socialism, which means controlling people when there are less of them. So he thought it's actually better thing for the regime that we are dying from starvation, because it was easier for him to control people. We become less of us, and then people are just so occupied looking for next meal, we are not going to challenge the status quo of the regime. That's why they are purposefully starving North Korean people to this day.
Do you remember a point at which, when you were growing up, you realized that you were being lied to all the time? Or I know it's very, from an outsider's perspective, it's like, how could this place, how could North Korea exist as it is, a regime just built upon really slavery of its own people and a mountain of lies? Do you remember, was there a time when you can just recall, you thought to yourself, what they're telling us all, this cannot be true? Or how did you come to understand what was really going on around you despite all the propaganda?
I didn't understand. Even after I escaped to China, I thought that Kim Jong-il had the power to read my mind. I thought he was a god. I did not know that what even propaganda was, what brainwashing was. We did not even have a vocabulary to describe what that was. In North Korea, there's no word for human rights. There's no word for love. And if you don't know the word, that means you don't understand the concept. That's how they were controlling our thinking, by controlling the language. So when I was in North Korea, I had no idea that I was even oppressed. I'd never seen the map of the world. And just the only reason that I escaped was that I was starving and I wanted to look for a bowl of rice.
What was the school system that you were put through in North Korea like?
So it's a socialist education system where we have to spend 500 hours per dictator. There's Kim Jong-il, Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-un. At the time, that was just Kim Jong-il. And then the wives of like Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-suk, and their parents. So education is like really dedicated in brainwashing. And even when they're teaching us math, the math questions like this. there are 4 American ambassadors. You killed 2 of them. Then how many American ambassadors left Kiev? So even teaching us the concept of addition, it had to be through brainwashing and indoctrination. So, and other than this basic, you know, skills of reading about the propaganda and the greatness of the leader, and then reading some math, few numbers, there's not much education there.
So what happened when you finally escaped? How did you escape, and what happened when you got on the other side of the border?
So as I said, I had an older sister. She escaped to China, and then she left me a note saying, go find this lady and she will help you to go find me in China and escape. I found the lady when I was 13 years old in 2007 with my mother, and she said she could help me. And the reason she was helping us, at the time we did not know, she was selling us as a sex slaves to Chinese human traffickers. So we crossed the frozen Yalu River into China, and then the guards were bribed by the human traffickers, so they were not shooting us. Once we got to China, I saw my mom was being raped, and then they sold us separately as sex slaves.
And so you were 13 years old when you were sold?
Yeah, they sold my mother for $65 in 2007, and they sold me over $200 when I was 13 years old.
And so then how many years did you spend in this human trafficking situation?
2 years when I was 15 years old in China. There were Christians from South Korea who were rescuing North Koreans go to safety, which meant South Korea. So when I was 15 years old, these missionaries rescued us, and they helped us to go walk across the frozen Gobi Desert into Mongolia from China. And from Mongolia, I was able to go to South Korea and become free.
All right, we're going to dive back in a second, but I need to tell you, it makes a lot of sense to have life insurance, particularly when there are people relying on you to be there for them. You need to have life insurance just in case. It's the responsible thing to do. I got married earlier this year, and I started putting in place things like life insurance. Never had it before, but knew that I needed it now. And that's where Policy Genius comes in. Policy Genius lets you future-proof your family's finances by getting the life insurance you need at a fantastic price in the easiest possible way. Policy Genius was built to modernize the life insurance industry. Their technology makes it easy to compare life insurance quotes from America's top insurers in just a few clicks to find your lowest price. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $25 per month for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer coverage in as little as a week and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius has licensed agents who can help you find the best fit for your needs. They work for you and not the insurance companies. Your loved ones deserve a financial safety net. You deserve a smarter way to find and buy it. Go online to policygenius.com. That's policygenius.com, and get set up today.
So then what happens? Like, just keep telling me. So you finally, you have people that... able to get you out. You said you got to Mongolia. Mm-hmm. And in this mm-hmm. process, were there things that you were seeing? I mean, how, I'm just trying to get a sense, and for everyone who's listening, of when you've experienced such extreme tyranny and also such depravity of the, the human traffickers in China, were you even able to, when you finally got to Mongolia, were you, was it like a recognition of, oh my God, I'm finally free, or was it more complicated than that?
So rescuing means it's not like somebody can walk with us through the desert. The survival rate of that desert is not even 1%. We had to walk in the minus 40 degrees in the winter in 2009. So they literally just gave us a compass and said, go walk across the north and west direction and cross 8 wire fences. And if you don't die from the cold or the wild animals and the border guards, if you find the Mongolian soldiers, tell them that you want to go to South Korea. We did that. Luckily, we didn't die from all those things and got to Mongolia. And then, of course, the soldiers the first thing they were telling us was that they want to send us back to China and go back to North Korea. Like sending North Koreans back to their countries, like catching a Jew and sending him to Auschwitz. We are going to be facing execution, torture, unimaginable things that happening against humanity. And so we were going to kill ourselves. And basically soldiers were playing with us. They wanted to see how desperately we are fighting for our lives and begging for our lives. So they were playing us like toys. And then several months in a detention center, we were able to go to South Korea. So when we got to South Korea, this is not the end of the journey again. They put us in this a National Security Intelligence Center for several months, and they interrogate us. Some people even go through like lie detectors. They make sure that we are North Korean, like where we are born, what are our schools, who, like everything about ourselves, because they need to make sure that those people are not spies. After that, several vigorous months of training, I mean, the interrogation in South Korea, once we are verified that we are not spies and we are the person that who we are, then they send us to education center for 3 months. In that 3 months in South Korea, they teach us that Americans are not bastards. Americans are lovely, it's a democracy country. They tell us that North Korea, the regime was a dictatorship, and why we're suffering. And then of course tell us what's bus, what's subway, what is ATM machine. Literally, we are like coming from a different planet. In North Korea, we don't have like even electricity. We have like electricity once a year, but that's it. We don't know how to take bus. So in this 3 month period, they teach us like how to take a subway, you know, what's a dry cleaning, what's a supermarket, everything teach us. Then they send us to society to resettle in South Korea.
Wow. It's amazing. Honestly, I just sitting here at what you've been through. I don't know how it's possible for anyone to have been through so much. I feel like one of the challenges that, especially for not just Western, but any audience anywhere in the world, is it's hard to believe that such a place could exist as the one that you escaped from. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you've never experienced a place where, I mean, I remember in one of your interviews, you said you have to save the portrait of Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-il or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whoever was the one at the time, save the portrait of the dear leader. If the house is burning down before you save your own children, and if you lose the portrait, you hear this and you think, how does a place like that exist? When people ask you that now, how does a place like North Korea exist? What do you say?
I think it, in some sense, I do think that it is. I mean, if I'm a believer, so I won't even like ask God, like, why do you allow this? Why does this place, how is it even possible? And I think in a way, it's the reminder for all of us to see what happens when people lose their freedom. What happens when individuals lose their freedom? And so what the degree of oppression can be like? What's the evil? How deep they can go treating their people? And I think that's why in my life, nothing has been more horrible than my own government was in my life. And I think people really don't understand how evil the big government can be. And in North Korea, they did this all in the name of equity and equality of outcomes and equalness and socialism and communism, all those great words they used, most compassionate words. And it began from that to now, today, where the regime decided it's better to control people if there are less of them and if they are starving, to that level of degree of evil it achieves. So, but the thing is, you know, if we look at our human history, I mean, there was Nazi Germany, there was Stalin, Mao, like there are a lot of dark chapters of our history. And I think North Korea is all part of that when people join a group think, when people lose that responsibility for themselves and want something else to take care of them. And that's how all of that began.
One thing I found so interesting about the work you're doing, other than telling people, I think it's so important that individuals know that a place like North Korea can and does exist, because it shows what really the end state of absolutist tyranny looks like, and that it can be 2023 and there are still people who are being indoctrinated in the same way that you were subjected to as a child, the total deprivation of the most basic human rights, that evil could exist at mass scale like that in the world today is something I think people need to be reminded of. And that's why I'm also very interested in what your message is. And I have the book here in my hands, which I'll hold up so people can actually see, While Time Remains. And this is about more than just North Korea now. Tell us why you wrote this book and what your message is.
Yeah, so it's in a way that I began my life mission as to save North Korean people and letting the world what was happening, especially with these modern day slaves. There are 300,000 North Korean women in China currently. Their organs are harvested out of them. They are sold like livestock as sex slaves in the 21st century. And China is the second global power that everybody has a business with, and I really want to raise awareness. I came to America with that goal, and I went to Columbia University. And what I found at Columbia University was a reminder of what was being taught in North Korean classroom. The anti-freedom, anti-American, anti-free market, anti-individualism. This sentiment was so bad that it was exactly like North Korea. And that's when I realized that somehow America is becoming like North Korea. Of course, the severity is not the same, but the trajectory is on the same path. And that's what scares me. And I think that's why I titled the book, While Time Remains. I truly don't think that we have that much time left to turn this back. If we are keep going this direction, we are believing that meritocracy is evil. Hard work is a sign of white supremacy. Being on time, waking up early in the morning, is a sign of white supremacy. It's the, you know, finding a victimhood and just put that skull and dividing people. And what shocks to me is that it's always a dictator's handbook, right? Dividing people so they cannot work together. And then you that polarization, that division is always helpful for the dictator. And this country is so divided right now. With the mainstream media is, of course, behind that first, and then certain political parties pushing that agenda. So, and I think that's why I wrote that book, to wake up Americans to see how bad things are getting in America.
All right, we're going to get back into all this in just a second. But first up, life's a marathon and not a sprint, right? We all know that. So where and how do you get the energy to perform well during this marathon that we call life? Having the right biochemistry, the right nutrients and minerals, and the right stuff in your body, it is essential. Helps a great deal. No one knows this better than Chalk. Chalk is spelled with a Q, by the way, so it's C-H-O-Q. Their specially formulated male vitality stack is a combination of everyday supplements that provide you with the substance, that internal chemistry that you need to give you the energy, stamina, and focus to get the most out of every day. You and I know this, but it bears repeating. Testosterone in a man's body, it's a source of energy and drive, but over time, as you get older, it starts to wane. It's a natural phenomenon, but Chalk's Male Vitality Stack includes a leading all-natural ingredient that replenishes your testosterone levels. Studies show that it can be up 20% in just 3 months' time, and you'll likely feel the positive effects much sooner than that. Subscribe to Chalk's monthly delivery of their Male Vitality Stack. You do that online at chalk.com. That's C-H-O-Q, chalk.com. Get 35% off your subscription for life when you use my name, Buck, in the sign-up process. Chalk, C-H-O-Q.com. Use my name, Buck, for 35% off.
I'm just wondering, the huge push in this country right now to really, we've gone from discussion of equating the genders or, you know, equalizing the genders to effectively eliminating gender as a real thing, as an objective reality that exists outside of whatever one political ideology or one philosophy or whatever one individual may decide. Was I'm curious, in North Korea, was there, what was your understanding of like family role and gender? Because people that study collectivism will often point back to Marx, Engels, the earliest collectivist communists. They wanted to eliminate, they always hated the family, and they hated family, they hated gender roles, they hated all of it. How was that a part of North Korean existence? And I'm asking because what I see here today in America is I feel like the destruction of gender roles in the family is very much part of the collectivist and radical equity agenda.
Yeah, it's a really great question. There in North Korea, I remember my teacher was teaching us that the most important father that we had in our lives was not our own biological father or mother, the parents. It was our dear leader. He was our father. And if you see something that your parents are not doing loyal to the regime, we had to report on them. And Kim Jong-un actually literally banned Mother's Day. Because if we love our mothers, we are not going to love him as much. And now I come to America, this idea where that your parents are not safe space if they don't accept as who you are. If you identify yourself with these 10,000 different genders, your parents are not safe. You need to run away from them. And not only just genders are bent. In North Korea, right now at Columbia, I was hearing these things like math is racist. Math is made up by white men to control the minority. And the first lesson I learned in North Korea was this. My teacher was one day asking me, what's 1 + 1? I said, 2. And she says, you are wrong. Dear leader, like Kim Jong-il, when he was a child, discovered that adding one drop of water to another drop of water, what does that become? It becomes bigger one. It's not 2. That's how he proved the math was made up by the West. And now, it's that same thing is being taught in America, saying that math is made up by white men to control other people. So the basic truth of sex, all of these things are redefined. Even the word inclusivity, safe space at Columbia, they say we have inclusive environment. We have a safe space, which means not safe at all if you make somebody feel offended or disagree with the political correctness. You get shunned and you get denounced. Safe space means completely opposite in Colombia. So they are redefining all these concepts. And that's where you realize in the communist countries, you don't understand what means things anymore. Like in really George Orwell's 1984, the word does not have meaning. It doesn't mean anything anymore. They lose every meaning, right? Freedom is not free. Slavery is not slavery. And now Colombia, safe space, not safe space. Inclusivity is not inclusivity at all. Complete opposite they're talking about, but they are using these terms and redefining the words. And all these words, every concept is losing its own truth.
And you mentioned Orwell. I also, as you're speaking, Yeonmi, I think about Solzhenitsyn, the Soviet dissident. I wouldn't be surprised if there are some quotes from Solzhenitsyn in your book.
Yeah.
But where he says, live not by, it's I think of the speech that he gave at Harvard University back in the 70s, live not by lies, you know, let the lie, effectively let the lie conquer, let it, you know, flourish, but not through you, right? And it sounds like, yeah. In North Korea, the entire regime is just built on an endless series, an apparatus of lies. And while at a different level, and you note that in America, there's also increasingly a demand that people believe things that are just not true.
Yeah, I mean, this gender thing is like absolutely not true. And in a way, that's why I was saying, like, even North Korea is not this crazy. I meant this. In North Korea, we don't have 10,000 different genders. Even North Korea hasn't gone this far with attacking the basic truth in this way. And there are things exactly the same that North Korea, they said the, all the problems that we have in the world is because of the greedy capitalism and because of Western civilization and white men. Colombia is the same thing. All the problems that we have in the world is because of corrupt American system that were made by white men and the greedy capitalism. So the only solution to solve all these problems is dismantling American system, destroying capitalism, and rebuilding this country in the name of equity, collectivism.
And
so the end goal, what they want, is exactly the same thing.
Are you familiar with a book? I forget the name of the author, but it's called The Cleanest Race, about North Korea, and it talks about all the race propaganda. To tell me about this, because I think that's a surprise to people, is that there's so much race and racist propaganda as part of the North Korean regime. You said white, you know, white people are devils. I think the stuff that they depict of black people, from what I remember from the book, is as deeply racist as you could find anywhere. How does the obsession with race and depictions of it factor into North Korea and the Kim regime?
Yeah, it is. I wasn't hearing about the black people because I was not educated. I was in the countryside and I was in the bottom caste. But the white people, they definitely demonized. Even every school poster, they said that white people are cold-blooded reptiles. They are pure monsters. They torture people. They are eating children. They're torturing our, pulling our teeth out and cutting pregnant women's bellies out and killing the baby. And they love that, right? They are monsters. And this is the same thing that regime does. So when North Korean women go to China, they get sold and get raped and get pregnant by the Chinese traffickers and rapists. They get caught and sent back to North Korea. The first thing they do is doing a pregnancy test on women. And if women are pregnant, they put up a pad, the wood pad, and then making other inmates or officials like jump on the women's stomach until the baby dies.
Oh my God.
Or they put a salt water that is not even a clean, inject into the belly womb until baby dies. And even that baby comes out alive, they flip the baby, they strangle the baby, they kill the baby. Even mixing with Chinese, they don't accept it.
They're racist against North Korean regime, and propaganda is racist against the Chinese as well.
Everybody. They don't believe in mixing race. They only believe in North Korean race. Their international marriage is banned. Nobody can travel to North Korea, obviously, freely. So they don't want North Korean to mix with anybody on Earth other than North Korea. But we didn't even, North Koreans cannot mix because we have 51 different caste system. So North Korea, starting the name of equality of outcomes and everything equal, they got the power and regime divided North Koreans into 51 different classes. So within this class system cannot mix, because if my status is high and then the guy's status is my status is low and guy's status is high, when we marry, it's no marrying up. Everybody going down with that. The three generations of each family. That's how they prevent mixing the caste between same North Korean people.
We'll get back into this in a second, friends, but for a moment here, I want to talk to you about the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. 2,977 people lost their lives on 9/11/2001, but that day is still taking lives. People are suffering and dying from 9/11-related illnesses. Not to mention, there's also a whole generation out there that knows little to nothing about 9/11. Only two states in our nation mandate K-12 learning about that day. That's why the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is giving educators access to nonfiction 9/11 resources for K-12. That includes full curriculum units built around first-person accounts. Tunnel to Towers Foundation has also created a speakers bureau with access to 9/11 first responders, survivors, and loved ones. They speak in schools and community centers as they're invited. Finally, they've got a mobile exhibit, a high-tech 83-foot tractor trailer that turns into an 1,100-square-foot interactive museum with 9/11 artifacts. To never forget, we must educate future generations. Help Tunnel to Towers educate kids. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org.
That's T, the number 2T.org.
One of the ways that North Korea, and really I think the most common way that it gets into the global and American news cycle is around the possible use of nuclear weapons and striking, whether it's South Korea or other places. Having grown up in that regime and understood the degree of the propaganda and the really psychosis of the ruling power there, right? It's a regime built on psychopathy, effectively. Mm-hmm. Do you think that I should rephrase this, because obviously I would assume you're going to say yes, but is there any doubt in your mind that if the Kim regime felt threatened enough that they would fire nuclear weapons either at South Korea or other targets? Or do you think it's bluster?
Yeah. So this is a one word that we all knew. So Kim Jong-il apparently said this. There is no world without North Korea. So if the world decide to end the North Korean regime, they're going to blow up the world. It's not just America or their allies. He literally said, in North Korea, 조선이 없는 세계는 없다, like, is, which literally means there's no world without North Korea. If that means regime. If the Northern regime goes away, they're going to do everything they can to destroy the world. And I think that's what they think of. And so, I mean, North Korea already invaded South Korea to take over in the 50s. And America joined the war and they could not win. So now they're in the resting state, right? The war hasn't ended. And North Korea's dream is always taking over South Korea and bring the communism into South Korea as well. And the end goal is really like China. They want the norm to be the authoritarian regimes. Because of democracy, if there is, there's always a challenge for them because the people want to go those democracy and they have things to compare. But imagine the norm is the authoritarian state like China and North Korea, Venezuela, Cuba. Then everybody gonna think this is the norm and they're gonna accept that. Nobody gonna fight against it. And their goal is spreading this authoritarian like ideology as much as they can. And that's their end goal, to make that a norm.
What should the world do about North Korea? And if I could get you in a room with a Republican or Democrat or any, you know, presidential administration that wanted to really do something about North Korea, what would you tell them?
China. Talk to China, because China has all the kids. They are sponsoring this modern day Holocaust in North Korea. Without China, the regime cannot last even 7 days. Like, not even 1 week they can survive. North Korea has no natural oil. They cannot test nukes without the oil. China smuggles this oil every year, every month to North Korea, so North Korea can keep building these nukes, can destroy the world eventually. So, because no country in the world can trade North Korea sanctions. China is the only one that breaking all the international laws and helping this dictator out, and this mafia, the gangster out. So if the American government had the will to really stop North Korea, they can talk to China and hold them accountable. Really expose how corrupt China is sponsoring this most corrupt authoritarian regime in North Korea and enslaving 25 million human lives. But China is part of it. They are the solution. They are the, you know, problem. So like, really changing North Korea is not gonna come from changing Kim Jong-un. North Korea is a puppet state of China. So China has all the keys and they have the accountability on them.
Yeonmi Park, amazing your story, and I mean the bravery that you've displayed in your life just to be able to live a life on your own, but also now to take up the fight against totalitarian madness all over the place, which unfortunately I think is spreading, and something that I'm probably going to want to talk to you about more again in the future. But here is the book, While Time Remains. I know you have another book as well. I have them both. I didn't bring them both on set, but I have them both. And I'll come back to you with my full book reports for both of them in the future. But Yeonmi, really appreciate you making the time. Thank you so much. And thank you for telling your story.
Thank you so much.
Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. You may be able to reduce your tax liability while investing in a sector that has historically delivered sound returns. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com today.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.